23, almost, well, let's just say 24 minutes after 11 o'clock, our Mellow Joy Coffee Time. My pleasure to welcome back into the studio Richard Hebert, Hebert's Garden Center. And as we teased during Barry's segment, he has brought in a whole bunch of color today.
Well, Jeff, everybody is anxious to get out. It's just, it's not only been a tough winter, it's been a tough year with the COVID. And so you combine that last freeze that just knocked everything out and the nice weather that that's now coming out, people are excited and want to make things happen. So we brought in a lot of color. So I just want to talk a little bit about some of the color that you can do now as opposed to maybe some of the color you want to do now that you shouldn't do now. And so these are just a few samples of some of the easy ones to do now that can take cool and cold. And the first one I'm going to show is one many listeners are familiar with, are geraniums. And geraniums are very popular. It's one that what happens, Jeff, is people start to see them. People, you know, the people who kind of, quote unquote, know what they're doing, know that they want to get these geraniums in early. And if they do that, then they will, you know, they will bloom well into the summer. But what happens is people start to see them out in the landscape, and so they come in later in the season, and where they won't be available. When you start to get into April, it's going to be harder to find geraniums because as the temperatures get hot, it's harder on them if you're trying to plant them. But geraniums is certainly the leaves are big and glossy. They make gorgeous flowers. The one I'm showing Jeff here is kind of a pinkish with a little red specks inside, but they come in a wide varied colors such as purple, lavenders, whites, true reds, and variations thereof. And there's also one called an ivy geranium, which instead of being upright, and this geranium here will get about 12, 15, 18 inches tall and really fill in. This is a 6-inch container, which will fill in an easy 8 to 10-inch container. And they can be put in pots or in the ground. Great patio plant. They need more sun than shade, however. And then the ivy geranium I was speaking of is one that's more of a spreader than it is upright. So you see these, definitely you're going to see these in containers. They can be in hanging baskets, but they can be in any container because it will actually drape over the container. So geraniums are a great one. Ivy geraniums are another usage, but you'll see more of these, this particular variety, which is more upright. They're going to be much more available. The other one is petunias. And, Jeff, petunias are ones that we highly recommend planting in the fall because they will overwinter very well. However, this year was the exception. Okay, and I always tell people, when you plant petunias, you're going to be fine 8 out of 10 years. Well, this year was those 2 out of the 10 that they got zapped. And so normally right now the petunias would be in full bloom, gorgeous, just spectacular. The cold weather just knocked them out completely. So keeping that in mind, knowing that they can take the cool, you know, petunias are ones that will that is smart to get in early. Even like right now we got in a shipment of I think Serafini petunias and Way petunias, and those are more of a heat-tolerant petunia. But even then, we just get so hot, Jeff, you want to get them in early. You don't want to take a Way petunia and start planting that toward the end of April. It not that it can't do, it's just that if you can get petunias in now, it'll give you a jump so that they're well-rooted when the temperatures start getting hot late April and May. And those varieties will go all summer long and do extremely well. And, again, these come in various colors, and some of them a little bit more upright, some more spreaders. The Wave will be a little bit more spreaders. And this one they call a pot tuna, and that's because you put them in pots. And they get about 18 inches tall and fill in about 10 inches, a 10-inch pot. So, you know, and years ago, petunias, you just had one size. Now you have some that are smaller than the traditional petunia, but they're more prolific in terms of flowers. So even though the flowers may be smaller, doesn't mean it won't give you a great show, because it will, because they produce so many of the smaller flowers, and they and they do extremely well. So geraniums and petunias are two that you want to get an early start, and it's safe right now to do it. And we'll talk about some of the ones that are not safe in a few minutes. Okay, this one is one called Calabrachia, better known as the Million Bells. And this is kind of in the petunia family. Kind of has a petunia look. This is the one I brought is called is a double million bells, but they're also the little single flowers. This is much smaller than the traditional petunia in terms of the size of the flower. This flower is, I don't know, maybe a half inch wide, whereas the petunia could be anywhere from, you know, 2 inches to 5 inches wide.
Do the smaller flowers sometimes indicate more of them on the plant?
Usually that's the case.
Yeah.
You know, and with the smaller flowers too, especially when it comes to the Calabrachia or the Million Bells, it's a great container plant because you'll have so many flowers on that they'll actually hang, and it makes a great hanging basket. We'll actually get them in actual hanging baskets fully ready to go, or you can plant your own. So this is a great container plant to get started early, and it just it performs very, very well. And if you maintain it as temperatures get high, it'll also go, if not all summer, most of the summer. This one here is one called Dianthus. Some people call it a carnation. It is kind of has a unique flower, maybe an inch in diameter. Comes in, many, many different colors in multiple colors.
You know, when I think of a carnation, I think of more of a bulbous kind of.
Yeah.
But that one, more flat.
More flat, that's right. And they do have some that are.
But I could see where it'd make a great boutonniere.
Exactly. Yeah. And these are, again, very hardy. These are actually a perennial. But what will happen with the Dianthus is that as the summer gets start to get very, very hot, July-ish, they'll quit blooming. But that doesn't mean that the plant is done. You just cut it back, and it'll be green, and it'll start blooming in the late fall and winter. This one could have taken the cold weather that we got this year. So it's a good hardy one. It stays low. So many people will use the Dianthus in the beds as a border plant, and they'll put something behind it, whether it be geraniums or petunias, behind it with a little more height. So it's a great border plant. It's a great accent plant to a container. So you know how sometimes we'll talk late in the season of how to assort different flowers in one container. So Dianthus is a great one that you just kind of stick one, two, or three into the pot, depending on the size of the pot, amongst other things, and it gives you a great show. And, again, it'll go well into the summer. Cut them back. You'll have the green. And it'll come back in the fall. Again, this is one that it would be smart to get an earlier start. So, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's too early, I don't want to plant, and that's true with certain things. But these are the ones that if you want to get an early start, you just have some containers that you're saying, man, I need to do something with. These are all good ones you can get an early start. Okay, this is waxleaf begonias. I don't know if they grew any of these in your neck of the woods up there. Probably in the summertime. They wouldn't take the cold you would get. The neat thing about the waxleaf begonias, it's definitely an annual, which means it'll die in the wintertime. However, that's one of those 8 out of 10 years where this one would overwinter and do fine most of the time. This year they got zapped, and so they won't be coming back. But this is a very common waxleaf begonia. We'll also get some other varieties, Rex begonias and tuberous begonias, just many different styles and leaf shapes.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, I think I know where it gets its name. You know, the leaves.
Right, the wax.
I mean, the leaves themselves are almost worth having. I mean, the flowers add to it, of course, but I love the shape of the leaves.
And this is the most common one that you see many times in flower beds, in the ground. Obviously, they can be grown in pots, too. But then you'll also see some unique varieties that have different leaf shapes, different leaf colors, as well as different types of flowers that does very, very well. This will, again, this will take any cold that we're going to get between now and spring, and just very hardy plant in the ground or in a container. And the flowers, like Jeff was saying, the leaves are very pretty in and amongst themselves. But the flowers are very showy, and they traditionally come, the wax leaf begonias traditionally come in white, pink, and red. And then you'll get some off colors within that. But bottom line is it makes a great mass planting in the ground. The advantage with wax leaf begonias is that the leaves, they have two different types of leaves. They have a green leaf begonia, and they have a dark leaf begonia. The green leaf really is better planted in the shade. The dark leaf can go in the full sun or the full shade. So if you have a situation, which some people do, where they have one side of the house is a lot of shade and the other side is a lot of sun, well, this is one of the plants with color that you can actually plant in the ground in the pots, where they will do fine or either way. It's just that the green leaf begonias themselves will have to be in the shade. The dark leaf begonias can go both ways. Now, another advantage of planting begonias early in the season is that because temperatures are rather mild, if you say, man, you know, I'm not sure how much sun I got, I'm going to go ahead, I like the green leaf, I'm going to plant the green leaf and hope they make it. Well, by planting early, what will generally happen is that the green leaf will turn dark. They basically get sunburned, and they'll be fine. The leaves turn dark, they'll be fine in the sun, and they will transition with no problems. If you plant the green leaf later in the season, like mid to late April, many times it doesn't give you that. It won't allow it to the leaf to get dark. It'll just kind of essentially just burn and die. So as you plant the begonias later, you need to know where you're planting them. So you put the dark leaf in the sun and the green leaf in the shade. Whereas now it'll kind of allow you a little window where if you're not sure how much sun you're getting and you put the green leaf, it'll kind of acclimate itself to the sunshine and actually do very, very well and without any problems. And this one right here is...
Tell you, before we do that, we do have a caller on the line. Thanks for waiting. You're in the air.
Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Mr. Hebert. I was calling to ask Mr. Hebert, I had a very beautiful ivy, but I watered it because you had said, like, you know, it's best if you put a lot of water in your plants. I watered it and I covered, but unfortunately, it still died. So I'm calling to ask, I know I have to clip back all the dead leaves, and I'm just asking what would be the best way for me to start this plant over again.
Okay, so at this point with the ivy, you could cut it back, and really don't fertilize it till it starts to leaf out again. Now, what's going to help you more than anything with the ivy is when night temperatures start to warm up. Very good. So as of right now, what you want to try to do, I guess in an ideal world, if you can, you could put it out during the day and bring it in at night when temperatures are getting into the low 50s and 40s. And the only reason that is that if you can get that soil temperature to warm up, you're going to be able to see if it's going to come back much, much quicker. But we're not going to know anything on things like the ivies. I'm going to talk a little bit later in the show about the freeze and what we got to look at. But with the ivy, it's going to be warm night temperatures are going to allow this thing to start to sucker out if it's going to do that. And then and at that point, once it suckers out really good, you would fertilize it. So I think you're doing everything right. You just want to leave if it has any green leaves, leave them on there. At this point, you could certainly cut off anything that's brown or obviously dead. Give it as much heat and sun as you can and just wait and see.
Okay, but I tell you one thing, Mr. Bear, if ever that ivory come back, it's coming in the house the next time around.
That's right. Yeah, you're exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, thanks so much. Y'all have a blessed day.
Appreciate the call.
You know, Jeff, getting back to that, you know, the problem is that, you know, up north, your neck of the woods, y'all know what's coming, all right?
Y'all
used to it. You know what's coming. For us, we just don't see it. So it's... You know, it's kind of when you do things, you know, once every 10 or 15 years, you just can't think of it all, and you always miss something. So many people come in and said, man, you know, I covered this, and I forgot to cover my crotons. And you just don't see it till after the fact. You look out there and say, man, I just completely forgot about it. And it's because it just didn't happen often enough. And And but the Ivies are one that took a beating. Outside, it's going to be tough on them to survive outside, strictly because of the duration. But we'll talk a little bit more about the free stuff in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
So this one is called Gerbera daisies. Maybe we'll call it Gerber daisies. Real popular early in the season. And remember, things such as daisies and Shasta daisies, those are all cool season perennials. And so these Gerbera daisies, I don't know, Jeff, you'd say, I guess these are 5 inches wide and I guess hot pink, and they come in yellows and whites and reds, and really a real popular plant early on. The growers force them to bloom much earlier than they would normally bloom. And so, you know, this is one we get a lot of early in the season because it can be planted. The cold weather won't affect it. What you can do with the Gerbers will actually, the flower will last for several weeks. But as soon as that flower starts to fade, cut that stem into the green part. And so as soon as the flower starts to finish, cut them off, and they're going to come back much, much quicker with new flowers.
And how long will they cycle like that?
I'd say plants like this that are in full bloom will stay in bloom for about 5 weeks. So I would say 2 months of color. But if you keep cutting them as they cycle, they'll come back with new shoots much quicker.
Where would you cut along the stem there?
The rule of thumb is that you want to cut it back so that the green stem isn't showing. And that's more to do with aesthetics than anything.
Okay.
So if you cut the bloom off, it'll just look like you have a bunch of cut stems. So
if you can, nice stick you got there.
Exactly. So if you cut all these shoots, and that's true with like the Lily of the Niles and all those, cut those stems down into the green part so you really just don't see the stem. And the plant looks fine, and they'll come back with newer growth. But it's real important, especially on plants that are newly planted. As soon as those flowers start to fade, cut them back. Because, again, until you cut it back, that plant is bringing nutrients into these petals that may be slacking and not looking good, but they're still trying to support it. So you cut it back, and it's going to turn its attention to shooting out new flowers.
I was going
to
say, they don't grow out of the cutting. They grow, they just shoot a different stem.
Exactly. They're going to shoot a different stem. So that's why, that's a good point. Yeah. If they were growing off the cutting, maybe you wouldn't cut it all the way back. But in this case, in most cases, you're going to cut these stems all the way to the ground because it's going to develop a new shoot that's going to do well. The Gerber daisy can be planted in the ground or in pots. They need really good drainage for them to do well. So you don't want to put them in a, if you have a situation that you know, if you put them in the ground that maybe, you know, I don't know, the roof line or whatever is getting a lot of water, that may not be one where you want to use this particular plant. So well-drained soils or containers, they perform really, really well. They'll give you color all spring, well into the summer. Again, when it gets really hot, they may quit blooming or maybe not bloom as much. And then, they'll start again in the fall. And so it's a good perennial. If you want to do a border or something in the ground, like years ago on Main Street, you know, the Shasta daisies, which are the daisies which are white with a yellow center, very common plant, very hardy. That's the one you want to use where you're trying to want these plants to multiply quickly and fill in with a lot of green. Those will do that job much better than the Gerbera daisies. The Gerberas are one that won't divide as efficiently or as quickly, but they will they just have unique flowers and bigger flowers that are much more showy than the old traditional, more common, I guess, white Shasta daisies. Kind of a side note, the Shasta daisies today, you have basically three different sizes. Years ago, you just had one to get about 24 inches tall. Now you have some to get 8, 10 inches, some to get 10, 12 inches. So you have variations. It's a great ground cover. Does real good, and you could actually plant those now also. Some of the perennials, and again, Jeff, we're starting to get a lot of color into the nursery, but we're starting with the stuff that's going to do well, and we have a few tidbits of things that maybe won't do well, but people say, hey, I'm willing to roll the dice, and we'll just warn them. Say, hey, just don't plant a lot of this. If you plant a big bed, don't do it. You know, perennials such as Coreopsis, the Lily of the Niles, Plumbagos, Paxandra, just a lot of different perennials that are great time to plant now, that will won't be affected by any kind of cold temperatures that we potentially could get over the next 2 to 4 weeks, and then come back every year. And so if you're interested in planting something that comes back, you could do it now. And just and there's plenty that I'm not mentioning because I strictly forgot, Jeff. But
okay.
there's a bunch out there that you can plant in. And that are acclimated for South Louisiana, that does really, really well. And just one of them is Buddleia, which last year was a huge one, the biggest year in terms of butterfly plants that I've ever seen. And I think it was directly due to people becoming more knowledgeable about it, but also the pandemic. People wanted to do something with the kids that maybe could teach them the cycle and all that. So. But Lear is some that you could plant now. The only problem is they kind of look like sticks right now. But, you got to realize that planting things kind of dormant, such as roses, is actually beneficial. They'll root, and then they'll flush out with new growth. But they'll grow very rapidly. But that's one that we started to get that can be planted early that's very safe, that'll do extremely well. We're going to talk a little bit about vegetables. I want to talk a little bit about the freeze and kind of maybe clear up some questions that many people have. We got a tremendous amount of calls on, what to do with what, Jeff, and I get it. So I'm trying to think of a way of simplifying it. And so this is the way I've come up with. If everything on the plant is burnt back and there's no green left, at this point, cut it back.
And you said anything on the plant, not just leaves.
Anything on the plant.
Yeah.
So, and the ones I'm thinking of are Lily of the Nile, which makes those blue flowers that shoot up high. Flax lilies, which is the green and white. It has a green leaf with white variegation in it. You saw those. Those have become really popular. Aztec grass, which could have burnt to ground. It looks like flax lily, green and white, but shorter.
What is the grassy, maybe borders that kind of look like dead tapeworms now?
Well, that's probably ornamental grass, which is another one that you'd want to cut back now, because it's probably all the way
just
burned back.
Just take a lawnmower and just...
And cut it back.
Because I see it along a lot of borders and those kind of things.
I think that's what it is. Kind of red leaves or different color leaves.
Right now it's like a white.
Well, white. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Now there's nothing to it.
Yeah. And it's just flat. It's just.
That may be. Well, it could be ginger. Ginger gets taller, though, so it's probably not. It may be a grass.
Ginger is interesting. And you warned people about variegated ginger.
Yeah.
The other ginger, though, held up. And I guess that's normal. But it's interesting that the two would have such a different tolerance.
Well, one is a complete tropical, and the one you're talking about is kind of a red white leaf, stays much shorter, but it is a tropical, so it's a different type of ginger. Then there's the green ginger, they call it shell ginger, but it gets pretty tall. That one took a beating.
And what I've seen, it looked better than certainly than
the grasses. But there's also the yellow and green ginger, which took a hit too, but it should come back with no problems. But the bottom line, if everything is burnt on it, cut it back to the ground. And the reason you want to do that at this point, Jeff, is that if it's going to come back, it's going to come back pretty quickly now that the soil temperature is starting to warm up. So you don't want to have to go in there and start cutting it back and cutting back and cutting back the new growth. So at this point, if it is completely brown, cut it back, leave it alone, and don't fertilize it. Hang in there and let's see what happens. We should know within the next 3 to 4 weeks if this stuff is coming back. And I see, like the flax lilies, I see spots of green coming up. So that's a good point. When it comes to woody shrubs, and what I'm talking about would be, I guess, woody shrubs or trees would be citrus, hibiscus, bougainvilleas. We'll talk about, is that for us?
I believe we'll give it a shot at least. Hi, you're in the air.
Yes, sir. You're talking about trees. Maybe briefly, let's do the citrus trees. What to look for, what to cut back, if you have any information on that.
Yes.
I will listen.
Okay. So that would be the woody plants I'm talking about. Trees and woody things, hibiscus, citrus, plumbago, things that you can't tell because either all the leaves have burnt off, or you know, the leaves are just looking bad. You know, they burnt back. So what you do is you don't do anything to those right now. So the hibiscus, the bougainvilleas, you kind of leave all that alone. I mean, you can cut it back, Jeff, if it's obvious that it's dead and you cut it, it's dead. You can cut it back now. But if you wait about another 2 weeks with temperatures warming up, what you're going to be able to do is start to cut it back and until hopefully you get to a green part. Once you get to the green part, then you're going to stop. Don't fertilize it. Just see what happens. So that to address, that's kind of what you want to do with the citrus trees is leave them alone, wait another couple weeks, and then start to cut it back until you get to a green, hopefully some green part. Once you get to the green part, uniformly prune it, leave it alone, and see what happens. Don't fertilize it yet. So in an ideal world, I think what would happen if it's going to come back, it's going to be brown, you know, for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. You cut them back, and then maybe by the end of April, we're going to start to see some life coming out of them. And then once it starts to flush out really good, then you would put a slow-release fertilizer to help it come along. And so that's basically true for our tropicals, hibiscus, bougainvilleas, plumbagos, and the citrus. You know, nothing you can do. Some of them I know, oh gosh, anything that's young, certainly the lemons, they took a hit. I'm seeing people come in, Jeff, say, you know, my satsuma did good. I'm seeing people come in and say, my satsuma did not good. And so that's dependent on age and location and all of that. So there's a lot of factors, but you just with the citrus, we're just going to hang in there and wait and see what happens. And just remember with the citrus, they're going to want to sprout from the bottom. So if you're having any greening at the base of the plant where that little graft is, you want to break those off. Because it's going to want to take advantage of the weakness of the top and just sprout and grow. And then people come in and say, oh, my lemon made it. And then we start talking to them, well, where did it make it? So, oh, yeah, from the bottom it's coming up. And for like a hibiscus, Jeff, you know, the hibiscus, we're going to eventually, in theory, cut them back to the ground. And if they start suckering out from the bottom, they're going to be fine. It's going to take longer from the bloom, but they're going to come fine. But it's not true with something that's grafted. And citrus, all the citrus are grafted. So that's not the truth because they're coming from the stock plant, and that which will make a fruit that's worthless.
My limes, and I haven't even checked the tree yet because it's kind of off my beaten path. It has seeds in it, and I'm not sure if that means it's not a grafted lime tree or if it's more of a natural. Okay. I don't know, but would it recover better because of that?
If it is the stock plant, that's absolutely. In fact, it may not have any damage at all, or very little, just maybe some burning.
I haven't had the courage to go over.
Yeah,
to
yeah, oh yeah, and that's the hook is that sometimes people will have a lemon, and this happened 4 years ago, where the person said, "Oh, my lemon tree made it," and then when I went examine it, I realized what happened. What had happened is that the plant years ago that stock had sprouted. And so it may have been 50% stock plant and 50% lemon. So I didn't really notice the bad lemons because they were picking. So, but when it died back, all you had left was that stock. You said, oh, it made it. In reality, it's not. So the way you're going to tell is that it's going to taste like so sour, Jeff. If it's not the lime and it's the root, the stock, it's going to be sour, 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 but not sour like a lemon. Worse than that. And have a tremendous amount of seeds. So if it has a lemon taste to it last year when you harvested? No,
limes.
I mean limes. Did it have a lime?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, then no, that was it. Now the question is, what happened? And so you got to go look at it.
That's what I have to do now.
And then the other one is the bougainvilleas. You know, bougainvilleas, I think they had a rough time, but let's see what happens. But you don't. That's one you don't want to do a major cut.
I can't
cutback.
Even imagine a bougainvillea surviving.
I agree with you, Jeff. But maybe if you had it in the right spot. But the bougainvillea, I guess to my point, is that you don't want to cut that one back, you know, way, way back. You want to kind of just, you know, if it's one that was, you know, 8-10 feet, you want to clip it back just off the new growth and see what happens and let it fly. But I agree with you. I think the bougainvillea is, even the hibiscus, you know, it depends on how, if you covered and protected, you got a shot. If you didn't do anything to those hibiscus, it was just a tough one. Mm-hmm. What it was. Switching now to vegetables, Jeff, and man, people are chomping at the bits, and they, you know, they're willing to get out there and make a go of it. So we have a tremendous amount of vegetables. I mean, all varieties. And again, I tell people, if you want to plant now, which I think is smart, but you got to be willing to protect it. You know we're going to get something, Jeff. We're going to get, you know, either a frost or in the lower 30s. Something's going to happen. We're going to get it, you know. And so maybe I'm wrong, but I think the odds are with me than without me. So if you can protect the plant, it's worth getting in early. You know how I've been saying that temperatures are warming up earlier than they have in the past? Well, they announced this week that hurricane season is now going to...
They're thinking about it, yeah.
Yeah, going in May. And there's no question about that. And that's because they're getting hurricanes now, which we never got in May. We're getting them.
6 years in a row we've had a named storm before June 1st.
Right. So you can't just wait for... It used to be Holy Week, Jeff, and you just can't do it anymore because there's a lot of factors involved. But the truth of the matter is the home gardeners are getting smaller. And so if you wait to Easter and say, well, I'm going to plant 40 tomato plants. Well, that's one. You can't protect 40. I get that. But you can plant 5 and protect it. You want to get an early start. The things that you want to avoid early starts with that just notoriously, I mean, the people customer, man, my cucumbers didn't make it. My cantaloupe didn't sprout. My okra didn't make it. Is that those type you can't get an early start. But you don't really need to get an early start because it's, one, they're a lot more heat tolerant than a tomato and a pepper. And secondly, they cannot tolerate the cool weather at all. They won't even sprout in a cold soil. So don't rush on the squash and cucumbers and okra. Don't rush on that. But the things that you can plant, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, that you can get an early start, be prepared to help them along, and that's going to pay you big, big dividends when you start to get into late April and May, and all of a sudden the temperatures in the upper 80s and maybe 90s, and people are coming in with the newly planted plants and, man, you know, what happens, Jeff, is even if the plant survives, the temperatures get so hot that many of the flowers are falling off. So if you have a plant that's established, first off, the fruit would have already been set. So if you plant early, your fruit are going to be setting in mid to late April before temperatures get hot. So that first crop you're going to make, whereas the person who's planting late, that first crop, it may drop all the flowers strictly because the pollen dies. And so, you know, yeah, I get the Holy Week. I get because Grandpa used to do it that way. I get it. But, man,
what I never figured out is Holy Week's different every year.
Well, exactly. But look, Jeff, the old timers would say that Mother Nature is
in sync with that moon cycle.
And so and that's correct. But again, it's smaller gardens today. And so you can't just plant 40 tomato plants and when the heat comes, heck, you're still making 2 bushels a day, and even though they may not be as prolific as you would if you'd have planted earlier, you're okay. That's not the case anymore. You're just planting 5, and so if you miss 50% of the flowers don't set, then, you know, it makes it tough. And early starts, and we can guide you on, you know, what you can get early start with and not. And so it's exciting. I'm glad spring is at least popping its head out, and it's time. And it looks like the COVID thing is going to be much better. Jeff, I can't tell you how much curb service we did last spring, especially for the older people. And I think these people are the people that need to come, whether they bought or not. They just need to come out and just look at the flowers and look at the new stuff. And they couldn't do it last year. So I'm so grateful that our older customers are going to be able to enjoy it, because most of them have gotten their shots, and that's really good from a mental aspect for a lot of reasons. And obviously we still got to be careful, and so we're wearing the mask and. But I think, as Barry said, we're on the downslope of this. Still want to keep your guard up, no question about it. But it looks like we're on the better side of this.
Okay, I thought we had a caller there a moment ago, but apparently not. We are still got a minute or so if folks do want to call in.
Yeah, and we're starting our 7-day-a-week thing now, Jeff. It's here. Probably should have done it last Sunday, but that was my one last hoorah. And so we're going to go 7 days, and we're excited about it. The fruit trees, Jeff, it's going to be a tight year with fruit trees. I think I talked about it last week, but, you know, good selection now. You want to get them in early. And, citrus, and that's why I know selection is going to be tight, because a lot of people lost citrus, so they're going to be replanting. So a lot of factors that's going to make this a unique spring, but I think it's going to be good from the mental aspect for a lot of people.
All right, we'll try it one more time. Let's go to the phones and see if somebody has a question for Richard Hebert. Hi, you're in there.
Good morning, yes. Ask Mr. Hebert if he have his vegetable plants in.
Yes, we do. We have we've got two huge shipments over the last 2 days, and so we are pretty much have everything as well as herbs, a great selection of a lot of herbs.
All right. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call, and any final thoughts?
Jeff, that's it. Just looking forward to nice weather, and let's go.
No doubt about it. Richard, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to checking in with you next week.
Thank you, Jeff.